Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Big data. What is it? Is it beneficial, or should you be concerned about the huge collection of information that is available about your finances, your health, and a lot of other information? Well, we're going to talk about these issues and more. My guest is David LeDuc. He is with the Software and Information Industry Association. David, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you for having me on the show today.
Now, this is a big subject, very interesting subject, and I know that recently you held a workshop where you addressed a lot of issues surrounding big data, how it's used, and the benefits. And I like the idea of talking about the benefits. And then we will go into some of the concerns for consumers and the privacy policies and so on. But let's just look at some of the things that you were talking about at your workshop. And one of the things that really fascinated me was you're talking about using big data in the search for missing and exploited children. Tell us a little bit about what that was about and how it was focused.
Yeah, thanks. I think that's an important question, and this is a very good place to start.
But first, perhaps I should ask you, define big data for us, and then we'll move into the children issues.
Yeah, that's very helpful as well, I think, because big data certainly means different things to different people. And again, this is a very timely discussion because there's a lot of banter about big data, and a lot of people don't really know what it means, and it means different things to different people. Generally, big data refers to increasingly massive amounts of data being generated and collected that didn't exist just a handful of years ago, and the term is often described by using 3 V's. You know, I don't want to get into too much detail and techno speak about it, but the volume, the velocity, and the variety of data, meaning the volume, which is growing exponentially, and the concept of sensors being placed on so many different places and so many different objects, and the variety being different types of data, not just traditional structured data, but now a lot of this data that is coming from sensors is unstructured data. And quite frankly, it's important to point out that most of it isn't even personal. You know, so when we're talking about big data, I mean, it's tremendous amounts of data. A lot, most of it isn't about people. It can
it's
be
not
coming
identifiable.
Off of, yeah, it's not identifiable. I mean, most of it is not coming off of, you know, it is coming off of sensors on devices and various different
inputs.
Now, when
you say sensors, explain that to me. What do you mean by sensors?
Well, whether it's governments are increasingly using big data and data sensors and places to measure traffic. And, you know, I mean, it's literally everywhere. Where we go, there is the ability to put in sensors in devices, and appliances are increasingly being created with sensors that can measure outputs, inputs, temperatures, and things like that. And
tracking movement?
To some extent, tracking movement, but usually it wouldn't be a tracking individual movements, but tracking volume of people
like
in a certain place. Population, yeah, that's why cities, and governments all around have found it to be very valuable to be able to track volume and move and flow.
Well, you know, it's grown so big, so fast, yet it's there. It can be very beneficial, as you've pointed out. And so let's talk about the workshop segment that you all did on the missing and exploited children. I think that's fascinating. Tell me what went on in that session.
Well, yeah, I think it was. I believe everybody was very fascinated, and I think it was a tremendous opportunity to highlight how what is largely public data can be collected, and a lot of different inputs that are collected can be used in a way so that in a case when, say, for instance, and this is what we talked about, a child goes missing, that law enforcement can work with various providers of data, including the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, who work and partner with one of our member companies, Thomson Reuters, in this case, pulling the data together, data inputs being identification of a vehicle and a tag number and a location and individuals that might be tied to that location, and tying a bunch of disparate data together, again, most of which is public information, comes from public records data.
Well, you could have things like registered child molesters,
exactly,
for example.
Exactly.
That would be valuable input.
Yeah, it would be valuable input. Yeah, I mean, a whole host of arrest records broadly, a whole host of information inputs. And the availability of this information, it's increasingly available and usable and at the fingertips In situations like this so that it can be used and implemented for good.
Okay. So this would be something that law enforcement would be using. And I know that law enforcement works with many agencies, groups and whatnot, getting information from them on different kinds of things. And just like this whole business of the child molesters who have to be registered, supposedly. So that kind of information would be utilized by law enforcement to find these children.
Correct.
To help find them, to find out who's in the vicinity and that sort of thing.
Right, right. And I mean, again, this is not, I mean, much of the focus on data and big data, a lot of it isn't entirely new. It's just an evolution.
Sure.
A lot of this
it's
data,
just growing.
Yeah, a lot of this data has been around. Well, now there's more around, and the analytical capabilities tend to be better, faster, or more affordable, and therefore they're more widely deployed. So that's really what the story is about. I mean, the story is just about more data, better analytics, more deployment of these, and increasingly innovative uses that weren't, you know, were mm-hmm. conceivable 5 years ago.
Now, that always comes back to when there's a huge collection of data, and you say much of the data that's collected is not personally identifiable, but there is information such as about your finances or your health that is collected about consumers that is identifiable, that can direct them to me or you or somebody else. How is that information protected? I'm sure that the software and information industry must look at that very carefully and want to take precautions. What are some of the things that consumers, that you can tell consumers to give them a greater comfort level about all this information?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's a good segue into another element of the discussion that we just had at our workshop, which is there's obviously a lot of this information available. And as I mentioned, while the lion's share isn't personal, you're absolutely correct. A large component of data is personal, and a certain component is very sensitive. And certainly the protection of that data, the privacy associated with it, should be commensurate with the level of sensitivity. So in our workshop, we had several presentations talking about the ability to actually use data to benefit from having more data to prevent fraud, to prevent identity theft, and to actually protect consumers. Because as we know, identity theft and fraud and all of those crimes they're not new. I mean, they're old crimes that still exist in old practices in the offline world, in paper theft and, you know, identity theft, that's where its roots are. And it's continued to evolve and identity theft and theft of this type of information has become a bigger crime now. It's become associated with, you know, crime rings. And so we're all constantly battling. Companies and data collectors and users are battling increased challenges. But that's exactly the point, is that there's a significant amount of benefit associated with the more data and the increased ability to do analytics. With that comes the ability to do matching and authentication, and that's exactly what a lot of
right,
our members
how,
provide.
You know, we're talking about this in the general sense, but let's get down to specifics. Companies that are collecting information, let's say, for example, on health. To me, that's one of the most sensitive areas that we have. I mean, I'm fortunate that I'm healthy. I don't have anything. But, if you know, people who have mental illnesses and many other diseases, they don't want that information out there. How do people protect themselves and their privacy, and yet at the same time being able to benefit from having data available about them when they go to the hospital or that kind of place?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you've touched on an area that is actually highly regulated. Health data is highly regulated.
Mm-hmm.
The
yes,
Health Information
under HIPAA,
Privacy Protection
right,
Act, HIPAA.
Right.
So not a lot has changed there, other than, once again, there's greater volume. But and unfortunately, we're still in a world where too much of our data for in terms of health outcomes, too much of this data still exists in paper and not in digital. And
yeah.
And once again, it's almost the flip side to what you hear more about that's true, which is we're at greater risk of having inferior health because of the lack of digitization. And then when we have the digitization, as you identify, you know, people automatically react and say, oh my God, how is this going to be kept safe? I'm now all of a sudden at risk, when the opposite is actually true. I mean, individuals
in a
very big way. So,
let me just interrupt here, because mm-hmm. I've got to take a break and just tell our listeners that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is David LeDuc. He is with the software Software and Information Industry Association. I'll get that right. SIIA. And their website is SIIA.net. And they have some very interesting information there on data and its uses and so on. So you might want to check it out. I'm sorry to have interrupted you. But yes, talking about the health, I think that pushes people's buttons when they start thinking about information being collected on them, particularly if it's something sensitive or it's a genetic condition that they don't want revealed or whatever. So I guess it starts at a low level, doesn't it, in terms of how your doctor's office protects that information, how the medical bureaus who collect that information, and the consumer's right to go in and make changes to that information.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly a data cycle and to some extent a compendium. But yeah, I mean, it's an area that it has been highly regulated.
But we're looking at ways that can help the individual, and that is making information available if you're admitted to a hospital in an emergency. Would the hospital be able to, as long as they knew my name and some identifying information, they would be able to find out about my medical record, whether or not I'm taking any sensitive medications or whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, ideally that's the case. And I think that's where we're headed, and hopefully we're heading there quickly. But I think, unfortunately, we still live in a world where you go into a hospital and they want you to fill out a form. And yeah, then you go into you go to another room and they want you to fill out the same form. And then you go somewhere else. You know, so again,
well,
you
know, I know the privacy people have a real concern about, you know, personal information and financial. I think financial information is another thing. And again, I know that all kinds of legislation.
The Gramm-Leach-Bliley is the
that protects your use of your financial data. But let's go into some of the positive aspects of this. I don't want to focus on negative, and I feel like I'm being a little bit negative. Tell me some of the ways that I'm going to benefit from collection of data, and it can be in any area.
Okay.
Suppose I'm looking at moving. How would data benefit me? Or suppose I'm getting married and I want to find out what my future husband's been doing with all of his life. What are some of the practical uses for consumers?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll take a step back and, you know, kind of stick a little bit with the healthcare and the fraud that we've been focusing on. And then certainly I'd love to get into, you know, some of the more kind of new and exciting innovative uses. With respect to the healthcare and how it helps people, we recently highlighted a number of products and services where, again, the increasing amounts of data availability and analytics are being used by governments to prevent fraud. Fraud in government services happens to be a really
Medicare
and Medicaid, for example.
Right.
Exactly. A lot of a tremendous amount of money in healthcare is given out in these areas, and it should be. And what we need to do, especially in a time of fiscal constraints, is to make sure that it's going to the right people and then it's not being taken up and being taken away from the people that need it by fraudsters and people that are scamming the system, which is increasingly happening.
Oh, yes. There's been big dollars we're talking about in terms of
But the
of
good
fraud.
News is these products have really caught up recently and are doing a tremendous job and have been demonstrated to provide a significant decrease in fraud and scams, and making sure that, for instance, if someone is trying to pretend that they're someone they're not, I mean, the systems are so sophisticated that in some cases they can scan a wide range of data and find out if an individual isn't actually an individual because maybe they've pulled a bunch of information together using someone else's social, you know, they've taken a name that's a common name.
Oh, and that happens. And
it's matching. So, I mean, the data, it's a case where data is providing a benefit in terms of making sure that the money's going, the services are going where they need to go. So, I mean, I think that's, and it's important that story get out, which is why we've been focusing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you raise other areas. There's really no end to the number of different innovative uses of data. I mean, you mentioned moving. I mean, I think most of us are living in a world where even when we get on the internet and we begin searching, that what we're getting are customized results. You know, if you're searching for moving, we've got a much greater ability to find the various services that we need associated with a move.
Or even looking for a house.
Or looking for a house.
Or apartment.
Or apartment. And the ability to match what you're looking for with who you are and what you might want. And services are increasingly drawing, in many cases, where these are services aimed at customers, where by continuing to work with various different services, apps, or what have you, individuals can draw from similar individuals, you know, mm-hmm. and benefit from, you know, if someone in your demographic generally has the same wants and likes, and, you know, these can be applied. And so in general, I like to use the term, you know, smarter. You know, I think IBM did a great job of coining the term the smarter this, smarter that. But, you know, if there's a way to describe it, it's really in so many ways, in so many facets of our lives, we're being smarter, better, and the service to mm-hmm. us as mm-hmm. consumers is a lot
better. So, the thing that's important to me is that what you're saying is it makes our life easier. We can use, I mean, data, for example, is used in guidance systems. But then that data is also collected, and, you know, there's been concern about people saying, I don't want a GPS in my car because I don't want to be tracked. That could be good or that could be bad. Good if you're in an accident or your car is stolen or whatever, and bad if you're going somewhere you shouldn't be going. You know, don't want your spouse to know where you've been. And I'm kind of being facetious here because I know it doesn't get down to this detail in what we're really talking about, but it's there. And I guess the question is, the potential for abuse is also there. So that is what your association members have to be concerned about, is they're guarding against this.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is David LeDuc. He is with the Software and Information Industry Association, and their website is SIIA.net. So you might find some useful information there. You have some huge companies that are members of your association. They were participating in a workshop that you had not too long ago. And one of the subjects that you talked about in that workshop was how data, megadata, big data, however we want to refer to it, can be used in cutting down government fraud. Now, are you talking about fraud within contracts and things like awarding of contracts for the federal government? I was just reading something this morning about one company suing another one because they're alleging fraud. And, you know, we waste billions of dollars. It's kind of scary. Do you see that that is one potential?
Yeah, I mean, it's across the board. I mean, to some extent, it's contracts. To a larger extent, I think now it's probably more individual because it's easier. There are more targets, but certainly it's not a limited science. It can be applied broadly.
Well, what do you see? Put on your crystal ball. Look into your crystal ball. What are some of the things down the road?
Well, I mean, I think looking back to look forward, one of the good examples was after Hurricane Katrina, FEMA was scrambling around to make sure people had what they needed and had mm-hmm. money and were giving out literal cards with money. And it turned out that there was a tremendous amount of fraud in trying to do this very quickly, and there was not proper authentication, and data can help with all that. So as looking forward and since then, and with the application of these new products and services, many of which are provided by our companies, can help governments, and it's not just governments. I mean, to be clear, it's financial institutions. It's
of course.
It's you know, corporations. I mean, this is a broad application. The ability to make sure that the benefits, whatever they are being directed where they belong, as opposed to being stolen, mm-hmm. being stolen by people who are pretending to be people that
somebody
they're not.
They aren't. Mm-hmm. All right. What about the use of data? I read something that was, I thought was kind of spooky, and that was that using this your smartphone, that stores could track your movements within the store. I don't want the store to know where I am in their store. I mean, is that going to be used for marketing purposes or that kind of information? That seems to me that gets to be rather personal. What rights do consumers have?
Well, there are a lot of personal elements to this, and I guess I should, you know, back up a bit also and say that this is exactly our goal at SIIA, mm-hmm. is to focus on, obviously being big proponents of data and its benefits, we are focused on making sure that we balance those benefits and that public policies balance those benefits with privacy risks and addressing any risks and actual harm to individuals.
Well, I think one of the big concerns of consumers with when there's a lot of data being collected is the hackers, the people who are going to get into that data and take it and use it for whatever purpose. And that prime example of that, of course, is identity theft and all the data has been stolen, even things as simple as a stolen laptop, giving access to lots of data, government records, all the sort of stuff we hear about as consumers. what are your association members, what kind of steps are they doing, and are there innovative things that they're doing that will help protect against data fraud, data hacking, that sort of thing? Because that has got to be a big concern.
Yeah, we have a number.
Some of these hackers are awfully smart.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. We have a number of companies that are in that space, and it's an ongoing process to continue improving data security. And again, data security is commensurate with the level of sensitivity of the data. Mm-hmm. Raw marketing data on individuals and maybe their color preferences and sports that they may like and information like that is less sensitive. And if it were to get out, then...
Well, yeah, I don't care if you know I like red and, you know, football or whatever, right? Exactly.
But more sensitive data is... carries a much greater burden to make sure that it's kept safe. And the good news, and this applies broadly, not just in this area, you know, both privacy and security, is that there are a lot of laws that do exist. And to a large extent, the focus right now is on assessing how the current framework is doing. You know, how are we doing? We're early in this, what people call the era of big data,
right,
as we discussed earlier. So we're all in the process of assessing how the current law, how the current legal framework works. And we're confident that it's working very well. There are many cases where laws have adapted extremely well.
But unfortunately, laws don't protect you against hackers.
Right, right.
Malicious hackers who want to take over your computer system, who bombard hospitals and shut down the hospital system because of they do an attack, a cyber attack on the hospital. And I'm not making that up. I mean, that, as you know, is a reality. So to me, that would be something that would be fascinating to consumers to see what's industry looking at to do to stop these cyber attacks.
Well, industry is working very hard, and I would assure you and others that they have all the incentives they need. I mean, I think there's a bit of a...
Oh, I think they're all incentivized. Yeah, yes.
I think there's a bit of a myth out there
that
companies are not focusing heavily on this.
I don't believe that.
And the reality is that, as you identify, you seem to know a lot about this. I mean, the hackers have gotten so good.
Oh,
I mean, they've gotten
terrible.
So good and so sophisticated that it's really become a very intricate and challenging, expensive cat and mouse game where companies are spending tremendous amounts of money hiring more people focused on security, certainly than they were 5-10 years ago. And unfortunately, that's not going to change. I mean, that's something that is going to continue to happen. But in terms of whether consumers need to be concerned about that, I mean, I don't think there's a greater concern today. I mean, I think there's much greater awareness today, and to some extent, unfortunately, we may be in a situation where there's over notification where consumers are hearing about it, be it, you know, high profile breach,
right,
like the Target breach or others. I mean, there have been a lot. I mean, because of the reality that you identified. Consumers hear about this and they hear about that, and it's really challenging for consumers to know what matters. And
well,
that's
why
my
word of advice to consumers is to protect your information as much as you can. Don't give it to people you don't know, and by all means, protect your own data at home, your own computer system. That's getting down to the tiny little level of just the individual consumer. Mm-hmm. But I see people whose address books have been taken over from malware that's been loaded on their computers. And so it goes down as far as the individual and as high up as government and huge corporations, doesn't it? So we have to be on the lookout.
Absolutely.
Well, David, thank you so much for providing us interesting information on data. We shouldn't be scared of it. We should work with it. And we should also just make sure that all of our privacy safeguards are being taken, put in place. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM WFED Radio. My guest has been David LeDuc. He is with the Software and Information Industry Association. And we've been talking about megadata, what it is, how it's beneficial, the things you need to know, what are the privacy in place, and always look at privacy policies of companies that you're going to be using on the internet. I think that's an important thing to do, is to read it. Should be able to read the privacy policy. Do they share information and all that sort of stuff? But at any rate, big data, it's here. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.